I yield back the balance of my time.
All right, everybody, it's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton, and our next guest is David Spiro, RN. His website is davidspirorn.com. He's the author of the book, The Art of Getting Well, Maximizing Health and Well-Being When You Have a Chronic Illness. And he writes political stuff over at dissidentvoice.org. I think we spoke in January about left and right against the empire, and now is Don't Fear the Right. They are potential class allies, written from the left, from July 15th, 2010, again on the website at dissidentvoice.org. Welcome to the show, David. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks very much for joining us here. Sorry about the delay there.
Good to hear that speech.
It started out really, poetry-wise, but I don't really know about those things, but it sounded like a poem at first anyway. Good stuff. And, it makes a good, jumping off point here, that Ron Paul, clip. Because what he's saying is, the kind of thing, most of that, at least I think, that it's a very kind of centrist speech that he was giving, really, that it incorporates the very best parts of the left and the right. It doesn't make him a so-called moderate, bloodthirsty warmonger like Lindsey Graham or Joe Lieberman or something. He's in the center, but up at the top toward freedom instead of down at the bottom toward totalitarianism where those guys are. And I think that's the same kind of mindset that I see in your writing here. That, like me and like Ron Paul, you put all the emphasis on the war and the Bill of Rights first and culture wars later.
Right. And this new article, Don't Fear the Right, is sort of disagrees with what Ron Paul said at the end there about this is all going to be, can be done with through peaceful and intellectual means. I mean, that's what most people have to do, but I think that we all agree that we're moving into we have moved into a police state in a large degree and a warfare state, which he said. And I think we need to involve the people who are fighting those wars and carrying out that police state. And that's what the Oath Keepers are doing. That was the essence of my article. The new article was about the Oath Keepers, which is a group of active duty and retired military and police who pledge to follow the Constitution and to not carry out unconstitutional orders. And I would rather have police like that than Blackwater or the SWAT team. And so it's interesting though that they have been attacked, like most groups that are identified as right, whether they really are right or not, that they're attacked as being a militia or as being racist or a lot of things that really aren't true, because they, although they haven't come out fully against the wars and things, they do encourage soldiers to think for themselves and police officers as well, and I think we could use that.
Yeah, well, it may be, in the broadest sense, a right phenomenon, but what does that really mean? You know, especially from kind of leftist definitions, I saw Noam Chomsky saying, well, wait a minute, these are all working class people. Shouldn't they be coming to us, and why aren't we reaching out to them? Why are we sitting around condemning them and calling them racists all day and whatever when we ought to be their heroes? Maybe we're doing something wrong, y'all.
Well, I didn't know that Chomsky had said that, but I agree. I mean, and Chomsky's a pretty smart guy. So, there's a lot of, I think as you've often called it, the culture wars and cultural prejudice that keeps a lot of people who at least identify themselves as left from reaching out to people that they should be reaching out to, that we really have lots in common with, because culturally they're different, or because we disagree on certain points. I mean, it's really interesting to read the comments section on Dissident Voice with the first article, Left and Right Against the Empire, or in this article, the comments could get pretty angry.
Yeah. Hold it right there, man. The music's playing. We got to go out to this break.
Okay.
But we'll be right back with David Spiro from dissidentvoice.org on Anti-War Radio after this, y'all. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton. I'm talking with David Spiro from DissidentVoice.org. We're talking about left and right and the empire and the war and all that kind of thing. You know, well, go ahead. You're talking, David, about the war in the comment section over your article proposing that people get their priorities straight.
Well, yeah, and most of the complimentary letters that comments that we received came from libertarians, but not exclusively. And there were some people who identified themselves as very left who said that, yeah, we need to work with libertarians and we need to work with conservatives as much as possible, but with real questions about how that can be done, especially with what's sort of happening in the part of the political spectrum that identifies itself as conservative, that a lot of them have got are very interventionist, very statist, very people that it's hard to see how you could work with.
I wonder if you're are you familiar with the Nolan chart?
Yes.
So for people not familiar, your high school history teacher, if they teach you, it's probably your gym coach in the first place who doesn't know anything. But then if he teaches anything, he shows you this left-right political spectrum and tells you you got to fit somewhere in the reasonable center between Stalin and Hitler on the left-right spectrum. And what the Nolan chart does is it adds I forget which is the X and which is the Y axis, but it adds a second dimension to these questions, and if you rank right at the very top in the center, you rank as a plumb line libertarian, and down at the bottom is where the communists and the fascists meet with their total statism. And so it's useful for thought experiment purposes. I don't even know if the questionnaire even includes foreign policy. I think it doesn't, and that's probably its major flaw. But it kind of shows the possibility there of in fact, I would say foreign policy, of course, is most important, that and the Bill of Rights. And you see the possibility for where if a conservative Democrat like Joe Lieberman and a liberal Republican like John McCain can get it together and form coalitions in order to kill people all around the world forever, then the people who are opposed to those things ought to also be able to form those coalitions. I mean, that's what to me is the natural party distinction. It's not between, country and rock and roll. It's between whether you're on the side of elite power and the national state, the empire, or you're on the side of individuals.
Yeah, and I think we need to move. Now we're at the point where we need to start really thinking about how are we going to do that in practice, and there are issues that we'll need to work out. And that actually, some of that has come up in the comments section of this last article of, how do you feel about Social Security, for example? Is this going to, how do you feel about, can we work out these differences so that we can, ally? And I think we can, but we really need to be talking to each other and people need to get out of their comfort zone, and be willing to talk to people that maybe both in terms of their ideas and also in terms of maybe their cultural attitudes and things are a little different. And it's really, it's a challenge, and I'm going to keep writing about this stuff, and hopefully we can get some of these things going.
Yeah, well, when it comes down to it, there are some intractable questions, such as, abortion and the role of the federal government in regulating business and, whatever. But for me, obviously that's part of it, the second thing there. But most of these cultural divisions, I think, are basically just bogus. And this is what makes the two-party system a scam, is that everybody's divided not among people who actually believe that the government ought to be doing this or that about the important things, but just about their kind of cultural distinctions, whether they wear boots or sandals, crap like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, from the emotional content, the anger and that I see in these comments, and that you see when you go to, say, a Tea Party rally, that there's going to be some work to do for people to connect and to work out these things, and whether it's even possible or not, I don't really know. I mean, so far what I see is left-right, so what's actually happened is libertarians and greens, or libertarians and far leftists, Alexander Coburn types, right. Which I guess I would count myself as one of. And those people can see it, and the sort of the average conservative and average liberal aren't seeing it. at this point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's exactly right. But then again, the people who are the most ideological are the ones who do the most writing and can help to lead the way on things like that. And I know Alex Coburn has always been a Ron Paul fan. I think he's just, I think he says he's just a rogue Texas congressman fan, you know, and just likes that style of politics that Ron represents there. But so that brings me actually to where we started and what's really where the rubber meets the road, I think. One of the major important questions, which is, can the left get behind a coalition to support Ron Paul for president next time? After all, the last time, he said over and over and over again, I'm not trying to abolish your Social Security and your Medicare and your Medicaid. I'm trying to shore it up by abolishing the empire. And, you know, he had a proposal to let people who were under the age of 25 opt out of Social Security if they wanted. But he always was opposed to the George Bush Cato Institute proposal to privatize, quote unquote, Social Security by taking it all out of government bonds and putting it in the stock market. He was never for that fascism, you know? And so, I mean, this is a guy who's basically made his offer to the left. Look, I'm not, you know, I might try to abolish the Department of Education while I'd abolish the Department of Homeland Security too. Do we have a deal? You know? And that to me is fair enough. Should be.
Well, I think, and I think a lot of leftists would, I mean, you go out and actually talk to people about this. Then during the elections, a lot of people would say, I would love to see a Ron Paul, Dennis Kucinich ticket or something like that. Or Dennis Kucinich, Ron Paul ticket, you know? And so there are a lot of people like that, but it's going to require work. And that's why I'm mainly writing on left sites and things like that, because I, you know, that's where I grew up and that's the audience that I think I can talk to. And you do see an awful lot of pro Ron Paul comments on in the comment sections of like Common Dreams and other left sites. You know, not so much like the Huffington Post, or, you know, you get more closer to the liberal center, but, you know, the leftist Counterpunch and places like that, there is a lot of left support for Ron Paul. Although, you know, a lot of people also feel, and I've kind of seen that Paul is a little bit like Kucinich in the sense that they allow him to do what he does, and they don't trash him because it'll keep people, they think it'll keep people in the Republican Party or keep people in the electoral system. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, boy, I'll tell you what, support for Ron Paul should never translate to support for any other Republican. I mean, boy, that would be horrible. Yeah. You know, to shore up the Republican Party there. But, well, you know, and let me suggest too that when it comes to Pat Buchanan and, you know, all the different people, which I don't even think he's any longer at the American Conservative Magazine, but, you know, the whole paleo conservative, right? And the libertarians as well, but I mean, even just the paleo right. I noticed that, you know, left wingers get very uncomfortable about, you know, having any agreement with somebody like Pat Buchanan, you know, which, you know, is understandable. If you're a true blue leftist, then, you know, Pat's problematic from your point of view in a lot of ways or whatever. But it seems like rather than being nervous about that kind of thing, that he would make a great talking point for the left that, look, I'm so right that Pat Buchanan says I'm right. I'm so right that there's a whole group of right-wingers who completely agree with me about how we got to stop the killing of people all the time. We've got to reinstate the Bill of Rights before we have no chance to ever again.
No, I agree with that. And I think some people, I think Jane Hampshire over at Fire Dog Lake, which is a liberal site, or a left site, let's say, was working with and actually co-signed some articles and papers with Grover Norquist. And I think Pat Buchanan as well. So there are some people doing that.
Yeah, right on. That's leading the way right there. That's what we need.
Yeah. So it just needs to, and it's going to be, and it is uncomfortable and it is difficult. And I don't think success is guaranteed either, you know, because we are talking about a fairly small group of rightists and a fairly small group of leftists here. But I think it's what we got to try, don't you?
Yeah, well, that's my view. I'll tell you what, we're almost out of time for this segment. If you want to talk politics more, I could hold you over through the news and we could go on for another 10 minutes, or I'll let you go if you need to go.
I can do another 10 minutes.
Okay, great. Well, so why don't you hold on right there? Everybody, it's David Spiro from dissidentvoice.org. We're talking about the left and the right and, you know, what I like to think of as the new realignment. In the 1930s, I learned in school that basically the only people left out of the New Deal alliance were the old classical liberals. All the conservatives got on board for it. black and white and all the different ethnicities, town and country and rich and poor and Wall Street and Main Street, and everybody got on board for the New Deal. And that's really what we need now, is that kind of realignment where there's a real consensus that we are going to put peace and the Bill of Rights first. Oh, and end to corporate welfare too, by the way, which means abolishing the central bank. But we'll get back to all this with David Spiro right after this. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton. I'm talking with David Spiro from dissidentvoice.org. Back in January, he wrote this great one, Left and Right Against the Empire. And he's got a new one called Don't Fear the Right, which is a message to the left. Now, David, so here's the thing. This is never going to happen in a million years, but it's a fun little thought experiment type thing for me anyway. At least it helps me make my point. Here's what I want to see happen. Have everybody cares about peace and the Bill of Rights, all bum rush the Republican Party, rename it the Democratic Republicans after Thomas Jefferson's first real party born in dissent against the tyranny of John Adams, Alexander Hamilton, and the Federalists. And we'll take all the Jeffersonian leftists or liberals and all the Jeffersonians on the right, with the libertarians as the center, as instead of Joe Lieberman as the center. And then we will just name the other party the War Party. And you guys will be the party of taxation and tyranny, police state and mass murder. And we'll be the party of individual liberty and peace.
Well, I'll tell you what, call me up. And I'll be there, but I do think that's rather a long shot.
Yeah, it's impossible. But that shouldn't that really be the division? I wish people could see it the way I see it. It seems like we'd win.
Well, there's a control of a massive, incredibly massive media world out there that keeps people from seeing that. I mean, there's television and there's movies and there's, you know, you go to the movies and there's ads for the military, you know, right there before you see your movie. And there's news, and there's actually the Fox News radio that you have on this network, and it's pretty hard to get that message out. And that's what we got to work on, is how can we get to that point? Because people don't change their minds that easily, you know. And they've been hearing this for this, you know, patriotic, what's the word, jingoistic kind of let's go kill everybody kind of ideas and education and publicity for decades now. So it's going to take a lot of work, and I like you're doing a lot of. I mean, you're doing the best you can. I mean, this show. I'm really happy to be on this show because you're consistent about that, and we just need we need more voices. But I don't see exactly where those. There aren't a lot of outlets like Liberty Radio for these voices to go on. There are some though, and with the internet, I mean, there are more and more. So yeah, I mean, I don't think it's impossible. I just think it's, especially people, I'm almost 60, so I mean, it's like you get trapped in old ways of doing things, like let's get this in the newspaper, let's get this in the, an article in a magazine or something like that. And it doesn't really seem to work anymore. It's very difficult to compete. It's very difficult to compete with the, the War Party message.
Yeah. Well, and I gotta hand it to the War Party too. They really did good with this Obama guy. I mean, the George Bush scam was so transparent. George Bush's son. Oh yeah, he's a cowboy. He's a middle class guy just like you and whatever. I mean, that was ridiculous.
Yeah, but that worked too.
Well, it did. Oh, it worked just as well. But the Obama thing is more plausible on its face.
Yeah.
He's not George Bush's son. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And boy, it worked so well. And I saw Cindy Sheehan, bless her, she put this thing out on the Facebook about how, yeah, anti-war protest at the White House canceled for lack of interest.
Mm.
Oh, man. They can't even get anybody to show up. I saw a hardcore leftist, I think it was, in the comment section at antiwar.com said, man, those dirty hippies in the 60s did more to fight the war in the state before breakfast than all of y'all people have ever done. Pathetic. And that was with Democrats in the White House. That was with Lyndon Johnson in the White House, most of it.
True. Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, that was a stroke of genius with Obama, and I don't think it was accidental either. I think, you know, some War Party types found him when he was just getting started and groomed him to, you know, for this role, and Goldman Sachs and others poured hundreds of millions of dollars into his campaigns and made it happen. And
hey, at what point do you think they started grooming him?
I think before he was first elected to the state Senate in Illinois. I mean, it's probably when he was at Harvard.
You know, I haven't even really read about that. I probably should. I just figured only goofy right-wingers had written about it, so why bother? But I read, like, the Newsweek account was that he gave a great speech after he was a state senator, and some Democratic Party Clintonite types said to him, hey, man, you give a pretty good speech. Why don't you come with us? But that was the Newsweek version. Who knows what's real?
Yeah, and that's true of a lot of things that happen, you know. And when things happen that just don't seem quite right, like, how did this guy... Who is this guy? How did he get to be president at the age of 45 or whatever it is? You think, well, you know, maybe there was something else going on there, you know, that we weren't told.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the American people certainly wanted to believe in the hope and change. I mean, at least we got to give them credit for that, that they knew that, I mean, none of them wanted to take responsibility for being former supporters, really, but they knew they didn't want the Bush-Cheney era to go on anymore. Mm-hmm. Something had to change. They just didn't know what, and they went for the easy thing.
But. And it didn't. You know, there's a Bruce Coburn song. Can't remember the name of it, but he's got this line in there. I have seen the flame of hope flashing in the eyes of the hopeless, and that was the cruelest blow of all. You know,
yeah.
And that's the way you feel when you look at, you know, anybody who had some hope for Obama would feel, you know.
Yeah.
Wow, we got this guy and it's worse than ever.
Well, I kind of hope that that's true, that people at least are starting to, I mean, I would hate the idea that they just all drop out, you know. Well, gee, I tried my best and all I did was help get another, you know, bad guy elected or whatever. But at least if they learn the truth that, hey, wow, so it might as well have been John McCain, huh? Then, you know, there's a perspective there that's, you know, progress in the mind of the average, left-right believing American.
If we can give them an alternative, you know, I'm thinking of the younger folks now, you know, that came out for Barack and are totally, you know, burned out and turned off at this point. If we can give them another way to go, but that may not be another candidate. I mean, although, you know, a good candidate like Ron Paul would help. But I mean, I think about like one of the militias that I wrote about in this article up in Maine, the author Carolyn Chu created. It's called the Second Maine Militia. And she says, and it's definitely anti police state and anti corporate. And, you know, it's a bunch of poor people with guns. And I think that that's something we could do even in the cities. Maybe you could have an unarmed militia, you know? But I mean, I think we need to organize. We may need to find other ways to organize.
Yeah, well, and, you know, that's really facing the hard truth there that, like Ron Paul always says, this is all going to change, and it won't be because you listen to me. It'll be because, like I told you when you weren't listening to me, all empires fall down, man. This is how it goes. And now, you know, what you're talking about is, well, how are we going to take care of ourselves after that? And, you know, this is why I think the focus on ideology is so important, because, you know, when times are really bad, people are easily led by demagogues and easily led to blame the powerless instead of the powerful for their predicament and embrace authoritarianism and stuff. And who knows how bad it's really going to get economically here, but it could get really bad. It's already, you know, pretty consistently high unemployment for a few years in a row now.
I don't see that getting any better anytime soon. I think that the really powerful folks in this country made a decision about 20, 30 years ago to send the good jobs away, because the labor movement was the unions were the biggest thing that was standing in their way of doing what they wanted. So they broke them. You know, they just sent closed all those factories down, or most of them. And so I don't see that coming back. If you don't have productive, good paying jobs, I don't see how, you know, Krugman and some of these liberal economists saying, you know, more stimulus, more. What are you stimulating? There's no, you know, the underlying economy is pretty screwed and we need to sort of rebuild it. And I just think we need to be organizing at at the local level and at every level to try to take care of ourselves. And that's, so I was kind of Just this morning, I was on the Oath Keepers website to see what's happening over there.
Oh, real quick, sorry, we're about out of
time. Yeah, it's okay. But anyway, people are arguing about these things. People are talking about these things. And so, you know, I'm just encouraging people, get out of your comfort zone, talk to people that you don't normally talk to, and find out where you've got the common ground.
All right, everybody, that's David Spiro.